Chapter 24. As the fog had been the proximate cause of this sumptuous repast, so the fog served for its general sauce. To hear the outdoor clerks sneezing, wheezing, and beating their feet on the gravel was a zest far surpassing Dr. Kitchener's. To bid, with a shiver, the unfortunate flying waiter shut the door before he had opened it, was a condiment of a profounder flavor than Harvey. And here let it be noticed, parenthetically, that the leg of this young man, in its application to the door, evinced the finest sense of touch. Always preceding himself and tray with something of an angling air about it, by some seconds. And always lingering, after he and the tray had disappeared, like Macbeth's leg when accompanying him off the stage with reluctance to the assassination of Duncan. The host had gone below to the cellar, and had brought up bottles of ruby, straw-colored, and golden drinks, which had ripened long ago in lands where no fogs are, and had since lain slumbering in the shade. Sparkling and tingling after so long a nap, they pushed at their corks, to help the corkscrew like prisoners helping rioters to force their gates, and danced out gaily. If P. J. T. in 1747, or in any other year of his period, drank such wines then, for a certainty, P.J. T. was pretty jolly too. Externally, Mr. Grewgious showed no signs of being mellowed by these glowing vintages. Instead of his drinking them, they might have been poured over him in his high dried snuff form, and run to waste, for any lights and shades they caused to flicker over his face. Neither was his manner influenced. But, in his wooden way, he had observant eyes for Edwin, and when at the end of dinner, he motioned Edwin back to his own easy chair in the fireside corner, and Edwin sank luxuriously into it after very brief remonstrance, Mr. Grewgious, as he turned his seat round towards the fire to unsmoothed his head and face, might have been seen looking at his visitor between his smoothing fingers. Bazard. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious, suddenly turning to him. I follow you, sir, apostrophe, returned Bazard, who had done his work of consuming meat and drink in a workmanlike manner, though mostly in speechlessness. I drink to you, Bazard, Mr. Edwin, success to Mr. Bazard. Apostrophe, apostrophe, success to Mr. Bazard. Apostrophe, apostrophe, echoed Edwin, with a totally unfounded appearance of enthusiasm, and with the unspoken addition. What in, I wonder? Apostrophe, apostrophe, and me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, pursued Mr. Grewgious, I am not at liberty to be definite, me. My conversational powers are so very limited, that I know I shall not come well out of this, me. It ought to be put imaginatively, but I have no imagination, me. The thorn of anxiety is as nearly the mark as I am likely to get, may it come out at last. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Bazard, with a frowning smile at the fire, put a hand into his tangled locks, as if the thorn of anxiety were there, then into his waistcoat, as if it were there, then into his pockets, as if it were there. In all these movements he was closely followed by the eyes of Edwin, as if that young gentleman expected to see the thorn in action. It was not produced, however, and Mr. Bazard merely said, I follow you, sir, and I thank you. Apostrophe, I am going, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious, jingling his glass on the table with one hand, and bending aside under cover of the other, to whisper to Edwin, to drink to my ward. But I put Bazard first. He mightn't like it else. Apostrophe, this was said with a mysterious wink, or what would have been a wink, if, in Mr. Grewgious's hands, it could have been quick enough. So Edwin winked responsively, without the least idea what he meant by doing so. And now, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious, I devote a bumper to the fair and fascinating Miss Rosa. Bazard, the fair and fascinating Miss Rosa. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I follow you, sir, apostrophe, said Bazard, and I pledge you. Apostrophe, and so do I. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Edwin. Lord bless me, apostrophe, cried Mr. Grewgious, breaking the blank silence which of course ensued. though why these pauses should come upon us, when we have performed any small social rite, not directly indicative of self-examination or mental despondency, who can tell? I am a particularly angular man, and yet I fancy, if I may use the word, not having a morsel of fancy, that I could draw a picture of a true lover's state of mind, tonight. Apostrophe, let us follow you, sir, apostrophe said Bazard, and have the picture. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Edwin will correct it where it's wrong, apostrophe resumed Mr. Grewgious, and will throw in a few touches from the life. I dare say it is wrong in many particulars, and wants many touches from the life, for I was born a chip, and have neither soft sympathies nor soft experiences. Well, I hazard the guess that the true lover's mind is completely permeated by the beloved object of his affections. I hazard the guess that her dear name is precious to him, cannot be heard or repeated without emotion, and is preserved sacred. If he has any distinguishing appellation of fondness for her, it is reserved for her, and is not for common ears. A name that it would be a privilege to call her by, being alone with her own bright self, it would be a liberty, a coldness, an insensibility, almost a breach of good faith, to flaunt elsewhere. Apostrophe, it was wonderful, to see Mr. Grewgious sitting bolt upright, with his hands on his knees, continuously chopping this discourse out of himself, much as a charity boy with a very good memory might get his catechism said, and evincing no correspondent emotion whatever, unless in a certain occasional little tingling perceptible at the end of his nose. My picture, apostrophe Mr. Grewgious proceeded, goes on to represent, under correction from you, Mr. Edwin, the true lover as ever impatient to be in the presence or vicinity of the beloved object of his affections, as caring very little for his case in any other society, and as constantly seeking that. If I was to say seeking that, as a bird seeks its nest, I should make an ass of myself, because that would trench upon what I understand to be poetry, and I am so far from trenching upon poetry at any time, that I never, to my knowledge, got within 10,000 miles of it. And I am besides totally unacquainted with the habits of birds, except the birds of Staple Inn, who seek their nests on ledges, and in gutter pipes and chimney pots, not constructed for them by the beneficent hand of nature. I beg, therefore, to be understood as foregoing the bird's nest. But my picture does represent the true lover as having no existence separable from that of the beloved object of his affections, and as living at once a doubled life and a halved life. And if I do not clearly express what I mean by that, it is either for the reason that having no conversational powers, I cannot express what I mean, or that having no meaning, I do not mean what I fail to express, which, to the best of my belief, is not the case. Apostrophe, Edwin had turned red and turned white, as certain points of this picture came into the light. He now sat looking at the fire, and bit his lip. The speculations of an angular man, apostrophe resumed Mr. Grewgious, still sitting and speaking exactly as before, are probably erroneous on so globular a topic. But I figure to myself subject, as before, to Mr. Edwin's correction, that there can be no coolness, no lassitude, no doubt, no indifference, no half-fire and half-smoke state of mind, in a real lover. Pray am I at all near the mark in my picture? Apostrophe apostrophe, as abrupt in his conclusion as in his commencement and progress, he jerked this inquiry at Edwin, and stopped when one might have supposed him in the middle of his oration. I should say, sir, apostrophe stammered Edwin, as you refer the question to me apostrophe, yes, apostrophe said Mr. Grewgious, I refer it to you, as an authority. Apostrophe, I should say, then, sir, apostrophe Edwin went on, embarrassed, that the picture you have drawn is generally correct, but I submit that perhaps you may be rather hard upon the unlucky lover. Apostrophe, likely so, apostrophe assented Mr. Grewgious, likely so. I am a hard man in the grain. Apostrophe, he may not show, apostrophe said Edwin, all he feels, or he may not apostrophe, there he stopped so long, to find the rest of his sentence, that Mr. Grewgious rendered his difficulty 1,000 times the greater by unexpectedly striking in with. No, to be sure, he may not. Apostrophe, apostrophe, after that, they all sat silent, the silence of Mr. Bazzard being occasioned by slumber. His responsibility is very great, though, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious at length, with his eyes on the fire. Edwin nodded assent, with his eyes on the fire. And let him be sure, that he trifles with no one, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious, neither with himself, nor with any other. Apostrophe, Edwin bit his lip again, and still sat looking at the fire. He must not make a plaything of a treasure. Woe betide him if he does. Let him take that well to heart, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious. Though he said these things in short sentences, much as the supposititious charity boy just now referred to might have repeated a verse, or two from the book of Proverbs, there was something dreamy for so literal a man, in the way in which he now shook his right forefinger at the live coals in the grate, and again fell silent. But not for long. As he sat upright and stiff in his chair, he suddenly rapped his knees, like the carved image of some queer joss, or other coming out of its reverie, and said, "We must finish this bottle, Mr. Edwin. Let me help you. I'll help Bazzard too, though he is asleep. He mightn't like it else." Apostrophe, he helped them both, and helped himself, and drained his glass, and stood at bottom upward on the table, as though he had just caught a blue bottle in it. "And now, Mr. Edwin, apostrophe," he proceeded, wiping his mouth and hands upon his handkerchief, "to a little piece of business. You received from me, the other day, a certified copy of Miss Rosa's father's will. You knew its contents before, but you received it from me as a matter of business. I should have sent it to Mr. Jasper, but for Miss Rosa's wishing it to come straight to you, in preference." "You received it?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "quite safely, sir." Apostrophe, "you should have acknowledged its receipt," apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious. "Business being business all the world over. However, you did not." Apostrophe, "I meant to have acknowledged it, when I first came in this evening, sir." Apostrophe, "not a business-like acknowledgement," apostrophe, returned Mr. Grewgious. "However, let that pass. Now, in that document you have observed a few words of kindly allusion to its being left to me to discharge a little trust, confided to me in conversation, at such time as I in my discretion may think best." Apostrophe, "yes, sir." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Mr. Edwin, it came into my mind just now, when I was looking at the fire, that I could, in my discretion, acquit myself of that trust at no better time than the present. Favor me with your attention, half a minute." Apostrophe, he took a bunch of keys from his pocket, singled out by the candlelight the key he wanted, and then, with a candle in his hand, went to a bureau or escritor, unlocked it, touched the spring of a little secret drawer, and took from it an ordinary ring case made for a single ring. With this in his hand, he returned to his chair. As he held it up for the young man to see, his hand trembled. Apostrophe, Mr. Edwin, "this rose of diamonds and rubies delicately set in gold, was a ring belonging to Miss Rosa's mother. It was removed from her dead hand, in my presence, with such distracted grief as I hope it may never be my lot to contemplate again. Hard man as I am not hard enough for that. See how bright these stones shine." Apostrophe, apostrophe, opening the case. "And yet the eyes, that were so much brighter, and that so often looked upon them with a light and a proud heart, have been ashes among ashes, and dust among dust, some years. If I had any imagination, which it is needless to say I have not, I might imagine, that the lasting beauty of these stones was almost cruel." Apostrophe, he closed the case again as he spoke. "This ring was given to the young lady who was drowned, so early in her beautiful and happy career, by her husband, when they first plighted their faith to one another. It was he who removed it from her unconscious hand, and it was he who, when his death drew very near, placed it in mine. The trust in which I received it was that you and Miss Rosa growing to manhood and womanhood, and your betrothal prospering and coming to maturity, I should give it to you to place upon her finger. Failing those desired results, it was to remain in my possession. Apostrophe, some trouble was in the young man's face, and some indecision was in the action of his hand, as Mr. Grewgious, looking steadfastly at him, gave him the ring. Your placing it on her finger, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious, will be the solemn seal upon your strict fidelity to the living and the dead. You are going to her, to make the last irrevocable preparations for your marriage. Take it with you. Apostrophe, the young man took the little case, and placed it in his breast. If anything should be amiss, if anything should be even slightly wrong, between you, if you should have any secret consciousness, that you are committing yourself to this step for no higher reason than because you have long been accustomed to look forward to it, then, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious, I charge you once more, by the living, and by the dead, to bring that ring back to me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here Bazard awoke himself by his own snoring, and, as is usual in such cases, sat apoplectically staring at vacancy, as defying vacancy to accuse him of having been asleep. Bazard! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Grewgious, harder than ever. I follow you, sir, apostrophe, said Bazard, and I have been following you. Apostrophe, in discharge of a trust, I have handed Mr. Edwin Drood a ring of diamonds and rubies. You see? Apostrophe, Edwin reproduced the little case, and opened it, and Bazard looked into it. I follow you both, sir, apostrophe, returned Bazard, and I witness the transaction. Apostrophe, evidently anxious to get away and be alone, Edwin Drood now resumed his outer clothing, muttering something about time and appointments. The fog was reported no clearer by the flying Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.